It's Tuesday, March 31st, 2009, and you're listening to episode 141 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 41 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan, and right now I am recording this show on the lower level of the Carnival Freedom. Right now, I am attending one of the Gamer Adventure Cruises, and we're going to talk about that here in a little sec. We're going to talk about that here in a second. What the hell's a little sec?
Could have left it there.
It's one third of a triple sec,
I guess.
It's one third of a triple sec, which is very important when making margaritas.
As long as it's two thirds of a vodka. So
there you go.
All right. So what I'd like to do is start by introducing the Rogues Gallery I've got here with me. Johnny G's here, but I can't pull him off an Arkham Horror game, so we're going to be down to just me from your usual crowd. So let's start over here on my left.
I'm Derek Rex from Pulp Gamer.
I'm Don Dem from Pulp Gamer.
I'm Larry Rosny from Mayfair.
And I'm Kimberly Maida from Gamer Adventures.
All right, I got some things I want to talk about that are kind of work our way around the table. Let's start off by talking about Pulp Gamer. This episode marks or is very close to the start of Fear the Boot joining the Pulp Gamer Network.
And we are absolutely delighted to have Fear the Boot as part of the Pulp Gamer Network. Of course, we've been building up, we've had a relationship for a while now.
Oh, yeah. I
mean, as friends, and been doing some things back and forth. Not as much as what we'd like, of course.
Right.
But that's a geographical challenge.
I want to explain what that means, because people are going to notice little chiclets or something for that on the site, so let me explain what that means. It is not going to change in any way, shape, or form the creative content of the show. It's not going to change the website or the forums. It's not going to relocate the website. All this means is that we are going to have a copy of our feed, let me stress a copy of our feed, added into the Pulp Gamer site, and what this is meant to encourage is to help people that listen to their shows find ours, and help people listen to our show find theirs. So once we get that fully out there, I'll post some information about that on the site or in a future show. So if you want to try joining that broader feed, you can do so. If not, this is not going to change a thing regarding Fear the Boot. So just play along as we do this.
I think it just demonstrates that we're just working closer together on a lot of endeavors.
Yeah, we've had a positive relationship for a long time, and it's all been behind the scenes, and we want to move that a little bit to the forefront. But once again, I want to stress for everyone that's listening, this is not going to change what we're doing. So now, moving around the table, Larry from Mayfair, I want to explain his title, because he's not just Larry from Mayfair. If I understand correctly, you're actually the president and CEO of Mayfair.
President and COO of Mayfair.
COO,
yes.
Okay.
There is a very subtle difference there, but it's there nonetheless.
Okay, so I just misheard. Okay, you're the president and COO of Mayfair.
Yes.
And if we could pick your brain, I want to talk about what's going on at Mayfair right now and what you guys have coming up that we can look forward to at the Gamma Industry Trade Show. And then after that, maybe some stuff we're going to see at Gen Con. But one of the things that we're doing on this cruise, since we have Mayfair here, is they're doing a Settlers of Catan tournament that started... Kim, when did it start? Back on Tuesday?
Tuesday.
Yes.
Tuesday. Okay, and we actually have a winner, which is this gentleman here. You want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Certainly. My name is Darren Lacoste, and I'm thrilled to be here to join you. Thank you.
Yeah, I bet you are.
I am.
Winning the tournament.
I said you just got more thrilled, because if I'm not mistaken, the one of the prizes for winning is vast majority of your expenses paid trip to Gen Con.
That's absolutely true.
So, Darren, where are you from?
I'm from Orlando, Florida.
Orlando, Florida. I see you're wearing the pins. What was your previous cruise?
Good question. My goodness, I probably should remember that off the top of my head. I don't remember where we went.
He's in shock.
He's for Clemson.
I am. I have to admit, the last victory point came from a purchase development card. I'm still reeling from that, so I'm unable to answer that question. I'm
all
sorry.
Right. Well,
I'll get back to you.
Let me ask you a different question.
Okay.
Because if you just won the tournament, you're probably the most invested person here in these activities, at least emotionally right now.
I am emotionally, that's true.
So let me ask you this. One of the things that a lot of people have worried about with these gamer adventure type trips is that what's the point of going on these trips and being tied up gaming all the time, unless that's really your thing. Were you able to get out there and still do a lot of stuff, see a lot of things, and really enjoy the cruise in addition to gaming? Or did the gaming get in the way of that?
No, I absolutely was able to do all manner of things. This particular cruise had three different destinations that we stopped at, and boy, just the different activities to participate in. I got to hold a stingray. I got to rappel from one tree to another tree and then straight down a third, hanging upside down from one of them, which was a true highlight for me.
Was that on purpose?
It was on purpose.
Sounds to me like you got busted or something or breaking out of a South American prison.
Thankfully, no. I don't think I would do very well in prison. No, it was wonderful. It would not be a pretty sight for anyone. You don't want to go there. And for those of you who are only listening, as I know that's probably all of you, you'd need the visual to really kind of put that all together. I'll let your minds and imaginations wander on that.
Meanwhile, the rest of us are rolling along the floor here.
No, definitely. There's so much to do on a cruise. Whether you're on the ship, off the ship, it's fantastic. I highly recommend it.
Awesome, Darren. Well, thank you for sitting down with us, and enjoy your prize. And
thank you.
I'll be at Gen Con if I happen to bump into you.
Fantastic.
We'll definitely say hi again to see how you're doing in the next round of the tournaments there. So.
I'd love that. Please do.
All right, man. Well, you have a good one.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations as well. Very good.
Okay. I want to come back here in a little bit, and we're going to talk to Larry about all the stuff that's going on at Mayfair right now and see what kind of a look we can get into.
Obviously, they're still out there having a good time.
Yeah, they're still out there having a good time. We'll see if we look their plans. But there's something I want to talk about that has been on my mind lately. This cruise ties right into, which is gamers as an underserved demographic. Now, if you think about gamers, it's a crowd that's becoming increasingly diverse. But generally speaking, you're still talking about males within the range of 18 to 35 that have disposable income and are willing to spend it on their hobbies. Okay, generally educated, this is a dream come true demographic. Yet at our convention at Fear the Con several weeks ago, we had a guy by the name of Mikey Mason there as a comedian. He's on the professional circuit. But what he wants to get into is doing geek comedy and gamer comedy. And so he was trying out a routine at Fear the Con, and there's some things that we might try to do to help him develop that. Well, I guess you've had it in music for a little bit with things like what they call nerdcore. But now, Kim, with these trips, you know, now we're starting to get travel. That is, it's designed to what a geek would want to do. And
right.
If you look out in society, you can find travel, entertainment, comedy, music, whatever, that is geared to niches that are far smaller and far less cash rich, just to be straight, than ours is. And yet our demographic is largely not getting serviced. You know, there's this thing like this gamer cruise is a relatively new thing. You know, Mikey Mason trying to do gamer comedy. Okay, you get some internet skits out there, but it's a relatively new thing. Why do you guys think that is? Do you agree with the observation? Let me start with that.
Yeah, I do agree with the observation. And as trying to break into this particular niche of service to gamers, I mean, because I am trying to do that, it's very difficult because a lot of gamers, they not only have the demographics that you're talking about, but they all have a few more. And one of those is that a lot of them are very quiet people. They're very quiet people. They're not somebody that will come up and start a conversation with somebody that they don't know. They prefer to be introduced. And I make a joke, as far as my cruises are concerned, that gamers don't do anything until five of their friends have tried it and liked it. And it's that kind of thing that you have to convince them to do a certain thing and to kind of branch out a little bit. But the nice thing that I've really done is that once you do that, it's like introducing them to a new person who likes the same games that you have.
Right.
Once you have introduced them to it, it's all over. They've got a new niche, and they're happy, and they're having a great time. And, you know, a lot of my cruisers are repeat cruisers and people who they may do it every other year, but they're definitely going to come back. It's a different experience.
So do you think some of it, then, is the slowness on behalf of gamers to adopt or to try new things?
Yes, in some ways.
Not to boil your point down too simply there. But
No, it is. But the other thing is, too, is that people don't realize, you know, I think one of the funniest things that I've ever seen is, like, I'll have a cruise that's going out for $500,
uh-huh.
And somebody will walk by my booth at Gen Con, and he's got four or five bags. He's got a cart of games that you can look at that and see that he's easily spent at least four sitting right in front of me.
Right.
Plus, he's done his hotel. He's gotten to Indianapolis. He's eating for 4 days. He's doing all of these things. So, I mean, this guy is $1,200 easy, just with including the games that he just bought. And he will tell me that there's no way in hell he can afford a $400 or $500 cruise. And so, I think it's just a different way of looking at it and showing the strategy, for a lack of a better word, of trying a little different thing.
one of the things that I've noticed when you're bringing gamers into an environment that's not their typical let's sit around a table back at home or in the basement and play some games is that to get them willing to leave home, you probably have to, you know, find a way for them to encourage their family to come with them. In my case,
right.
My wife.
Sure.
My wife is a gamer. She's not, you know, as heavy into the gaming as I have. Friend that came with us, Chaz, his wife doesn't game at all. But because we were able to come on this cruise and there were so many things both on board and off, you know, on shore that the spouses could take part in, they're occupied, they're having a great time, you know, we're gaming when we want to game, we're doing other really cool things when we want to. We saw the same thing when we were doing our camping trips back in Tennessee. Again, we do a long weekend, literally rent a farmhouse and go camping with tents around it or stay inside the house. But it wasn't just 4 days of gaming. It was a gaming club, as long as there were other things that were involved. We did some canoe trips down the river that was right there. There was a paintball course that you could go out and have your fights with. So as long as there were some alternate activities that gamers could do if they chose, and the non-gamers could do to keep themselves occupied, everybody came out happy.
Right. And you did have a little bit of a split, so to speak, as far as you'd have some people that would just jump out and do those alternate activities, and others that would stay in the house. Or as in this case, we had a bunch of people that really enjoyed as much time as they could. They were right there playing the games. And maybe it's contentment. Maybe that, you know, if you're having a good time playing the game, why go do something else?
Do you think gamers are uniquely hesitant to try new things? And I realize it's going to vary from individual to individual. There's somebody right now frothing, saying, wait a minute, I try new things all the time. And
oh, that's all about, yeah, well, that's just my lifestyle. It's like, I want, my favorite game is the one I haven't played yet. I want to do something new, try something new. And it's easy for me personally. That's why it's kind of hard for me to jump in on this, you know, on parts of it, because I am so much, I want to go out and
I'm going to go out on a limb here. In your group of friends, were you traditionally the game master?
Oh, yeah. Very much
so. We talked at length to a couple people on the show, Ryan Dancy being the one that first comes to mind, about how within games you basically get, very, very broadly speaking, two types of people, one of which are kind of the super salesmen. It's the game master, and this person's almost always the game master, who goes out, sees a new game, can envision cool experiences you could have within it, wants to try it, can see where it would go. And his group of friends would never touch it. And typically there's an uphill sale for him to convince them to try it. And I saw that with this cruise.
Yeah.
There were people I tried to get to come who just could not conceive of either A, why a cruise would be fun, or B, why a cruise with gaming would be worth doing. And I actually ended up getting the people I did come with me, you know, largely by subsidizing a portion of their trip, but you know, there was certainly that uphill battle. And I wonder if some of that plays into, getting back to the original point, of the fact that the gamer demographic is underserved, is the fact that we as a culture, or maybe it's not even distinctly us, I don't know, maybe it is, but the fact that it's so hard to sell us on ideas. I mean, have companies wandered into this and walked away because they couldn't sell it? I mean, Kim, you're talking about...
Right. Well, the other thing is, too, is that you have to realize that the word gamer doesn't really mean the kind of games that we're doing anymore. When I tell somebody I want to do a gaming cruise, they immediately go to poker. They immediately go into that. And I was like, no, it's like board games. And then they're going like Clue, Monopoly. They have no idea. And I think it's this type of strategic gaming that is the underserved part of it, because we've never really been out there. And only a few of them break into the mainstream, like the ones that got picked up by Hasbro or Mattel or something like that. And it's a little bit difficult to put that together.
What we find building on that is, you know, what do you do for a living? What do you do this? I make board games. Oh, video? No, I make board games out of paper and cardboard.
Right.
Good old-fashioned stuff. And then, of course, then the next thing is, oh, like Monopoly. Well, yes, in some cases it's like Monopoly, where you roll the dice and you do something. But it is hard to explain what we do. We haven't exactly hit the great silent majority yet, but we're working on it.
Well, and one of the most unfortunate things about it, and I don't know if unfortunate is the correct word, but is when you try to talk to people about role-playing games or strategy games and stuff like that, the only thing they are familiar with whatsoever is Dungeons & Dragons. And that has kind of a weird connotation to it for a lot of the general public. So they immediately put you down into a category of gamers that are kind of clandestine basement gamers, you know, not somebody who, you know, has a multi-million dollar business or has, you know, these big conventions with 40,000 people and that type of thing.
Let's talk about that for a sec. Do you guys think the issue here is that people have tried to serve this demographic and failed, or that they largely haven't tried? And perhaps one of the reasons they haven't tried is because of the fact that gaming carries such a negative image. All right, I don't want to get into a political thing, either on the show or off the show, but, for example, you can look at a lot of the flack that companies have taken for doing gay events. Okay, just this is one example, all right? And we could talk about many other demographics like that. Do you think there's some negative association with gamers that says, on one hand, either we don't want to do a gaming-related event because of the negative connotation, or because they have such a negative stereotype, they don't think it will succeed? Or conversely, do you think the issues they have tried, and these companies have gotten in here, just hasn't worked, and they've walked away?
It's probably all of the above.
Yeah.
Okay, realistically, it's probably all the way above. The one I'm focusing on is they've tried to do something and hasn't been successful, so they walked away. Gamers are a unique kind of people, and they like to do what they do. They don't necessarily care if anybody else approves or what have you. They just go ahead and do this. Okay? The demographic of the gamer is changing now, however, as time goes on, and more of our strategic game companies, peers of Mayfair like Fantasy Flight and Rio Grande and so on, they're putting more of this stuff out there for people to look at. And then there's this whole thing, I might play with a friend who's not a complete gamer yet, and ultimately they'll play with somebody else who isn't a gamer at all who will buy the game or get into it on some level. Okay, that group is growing. The group that isn't growing, the group that the core gamer demographic, that's the group that's not really, I don't know what it's doing right now. Okay, there's been various peaks and valleys in the industry over the years. Magic pretty much rescued strategic gaming at some point because people were starting to walk away from D&D and some of the other kind of stuff that was going on. I mean, I find myself still explaining D&D, and I don't get as much negative as maybe we used to. When I'm saying we're the industry that sprung out of D&D, which, of course, before that sprung out of wargaming, going back to the 20s, 30s, and 40s and whatnot, the non-commercial, the independent people who were making war games. I mean, that's really our roots going back to that. Not Magic, not D&D, none of that. All these guys who are now old farts, you know, gotta love them though. They're the ones that kept at it, that started a lot of this stuff going way back after World War II and even prior to that, for that matter. You know, and that industry's grown out of that. I mean, you think about Lake Geneva and all those guys that started D&D. A number of them were veterans. Certainly all of them were veterans of historical war games. And they just took it to a different level.
Larry, do you think things like this cruise helped to change the image of gamers, given that, and I don't think any of us are here on a PR mission, but given the fact that we're doing what we do no longer at Gen Con or isolated from people, but we're doing it right here in the midst of people that are themselves on idle time?
Yeah, I'm hoping that we're reaching out to that kind of thing by coming out and doing this. I mean, we had a very good showing of folks. Everybody that came are good gamers, okay, and they're a wonderful cross-section of the group, you know, and they present the group of gamers very well to everybody. And I think those kinds of things are starting to happen. The other thing is the original D&D players are getting older and having children. Let's not forget about that.
Right.
Okay, so now we're turning this into family gaming. Okay, which is, of course, what we're trying to be about at Mayfair, and a number of other companies are doing the same thing. Those guys have finally found their love of their life, and they're having children. Okay, and of course, since they gamed, their children are gaming. So they don't have that gamer connotation on top of them. Because, well, my mom and dad taught me how to do this. And that's why I say that the demographic is changing. The quintessential gamer, can't put them in a pigeonhole anymore. It really is changing.
Yeah, I was seeing her reach for the microphone, I think, but mostly I was going to echo sort of the same thing, where it's the industry that at the same time starting to expand their envelope to include more people, have a wider variety of games that are inclusive, that are all engaging, and able to encompass somebody that is maybe hits that middle ground. I typically look at the Eurostyle game especially as being something, it's not super complex wargaming. It's something that gamers can really sink their teeth into because it's got some great strategy, but it's something lighthearted enough that anybody can pick it up and learn it in a matter of minutes.
Board games also work really well in that regard because they're so visual. I've got a little sister who, to best of my knowledge, has never in her life played a role-playing game. But when I was at Fear the Con, I saw a board game, and I couldn't tell you who makes it, but where you race ducks around a bathtub.
I've seen it.
And she got such a kick out of that because it comes with 6 or 7 collectible little rubber ducks that are wearing different costumes. And this is something that she can instantly relate to. But, you know, I think even within RPGs, you see something similar going on with what they're calling the girlfriend games. This could be games that are just simpler and easier to play, but this could also be games that uniquely appeal to some demographic that wasn't previously serviced. They're written to children. They're
like some girlfriend games.
What about Bellicera? Bellicera is way out there.
It's all girl.
Yeah, it's all girl. It competes with Pokemon and all of that for the boys. They hit a hell of a market. They're in Target. They're in a lot of different places. And almost all of the cartoons now have a website that you can go to, and there's a collectible something. So, you know, I do see it expanding. I think it has a ways to go, but I do think it's going to expand.
Just the fact of over the years now, I mean, Gen Con, just taking a look at our largest convention in this country, for our industry, for lack of a better word, has now grown to over 30,000 people. Now, granted, they have set up an entire video section, but we find that the video people are coming over to the board gaming side of the hall, and the board gaming people are going over to the video side of the hall. So I'm hoping that the lines become less defined, you know, and with the advent of a lot of the games like Settlers of Catan, like Hey, That's My Fish, and I can't think of anybody else's games right now, but that's okay because they're not mine, are transferring over to some kind of electronic media, okay? Be it Xbox, be it
be it
online
Live
stuff,
right.
Mm-hmm. Be it whatever. Hey, That's My Fish is on telephones over in Europe. They're doing a whole lot of that, and again, other companies are doing that as well. So we are reaching out to the video gamers to show them there's something more than a one-person shooter out there,
right?
Okay, which really is popular with the parents, who are ultimately funding all of this.
Right.
And the more we teach them that, we're not saying that the one-person shooter is a bad game. It's just that there's other stuff out there that takes you out into around a table, or even, you know, it takes you around a table so that you're interacting with bodies, or even if you're in your computer doing something, you're still interacting with bodies as the game is played. You've got to trade with somebody for this, or you've got to do this, or whatever it is, you know, and there's the lines are blurring, which I think is good. We were going down a wrong path there for a while where it was video, and at some point people realized that that was probably not the best thing to do altogether.
Well, and I also think it's really weird is that for the bum rap that all the gamers get for being antisocial, that we play the most social of all the games.
Absolutely.
You know, you get on that video game or whatever, and these people don't ever look up, you know,
right.
And you, God knows you can't disturb them. Back in the day, I remember my parents, my grandparents, every holiday, you know, break out a deck of cards, and it was rummy or pinochle or poker or whatever.
We did Tripoli at home.
Right, exactly. I mean, everybody has that family dynamic that used to happen before all of these electronic things came into play. And I think there's even a demographic that, you know, it's really funny because I live in California, but almost, I would say there were 5 people that I've ever serviced in California. All my other clients are in the Midwest or on the East Coast. And I'm wondering, do you think there's a demographic there just because of the weather? I mean, people don't go outside as much as they do in California?
The thing that's always been pointed to when I talk to people that make a life out of trying to study the gaming industry is it has to do with the neighborhoods you live in, that people in rural settings generally will not game, partially because of negative stigma, partially because it's too hard to get together.
Okay.
People that are in an urban setting will generally not game, partially because of negative stigma, partially because you're too mobile. It's too easy to get to places and do things because they're all right there. And so where gaming absolutely thrives is in suburbs, typically among age groups that have only some mobility. Because if they have too much mobility, they go out and do things. If they have no mobility, they can't get together.
Okay.
And so it's among suburbs. And I have I've anecdotally seen this to be true because, for example, St. Louis is a relatively small city with a suburb that just stretches on for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles, and it's one of the largest gaming markets in the nation. And so I won't claim to be an expert, but the people I've talked to are consistently told me it has to do with the nature of the neighborhoods you live in.
Yeah, there's a reason why Gen Con is in Indianapolis.
Right.
There's a reason why Origins is in Columbus, with not as much history as other folks. I mean, I've had the chair for 10 years. I was a demo guy for 9 years before that for Mayfair Games. And it's not always the case, but in most of the time, if you go west of the Mississippi, your convention will suffer. It's a fact. Origins, pretty much every time it went west of the Mississippi, had unbelievably bad attendance. I happened to be at Fort Worth when there were a grand total of 3,000 people there. This is a big show. Gen Con SoCal is no more. There's a reason for that. People just didn't go. Talk about the dynamic about the West Coast and California in general. What somebody observed was California people like to get up, go drive somewhere, go do something, and then go home. Okay, so they might have visited SoCal, but they were only there for a day. If they could drive there, do the thing, and get home, they went. Flying to San Diego and staying in a hotel, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen for that particular demographic. I mean, you just take a look at your history. Where did Gen Con grow and get big? Wisconsin, of all places. Mm-hmm. There's your suburb theory right there.
Right.
Until it finally got to Milwaukee. It was in Lake Geneva. It was at the college, wherever that was, for a number of years, near Kenosha or Racine or what have you. And then it finally ended up in the big city in Wisconsin and Milwaukee, thrived there, and has continued on doing wonderful large numbers in Indianapolis. You go west, I just don't know what happens, but it does.
Let's take this in a kind of a looking forward direction. What areas of entertainment or service right now do not gear to gamers at all that you would like to see do so? Okay, we're getting gamer trips. We certainly have gamer conventions. Obviously, we have gamer radio. But what kind of things would you guys like to see that aren't currently being made specifically with gamers in mind?
Yeah, I think actually, and this is going to be a little bit self-serving on behalf of the industry, I want to see us more in mass media. I've often thought that the one thing the industry needed more than anything else was an organized PR campaign. You know, to get gaming out there.
Yeah, the mass media is very important, but you have to not in a very positive light, because I have seen us, you know, have using a gamer situation in situational comedies. I've seen all of those things, but it's normally as some kind of really wild subset of the real people. And
But even if it's a matter of just product placement. If we can get products placed on movies as just this is part of the average experience.
That
I've seen
good,
a few games starting to do that. You know, get out there and be shown in mass media. It's like, oh, I never thought about it. And then that is really, I think, one way in which we can get into that mainstream. So I don't know if it's so much about having specific stuff made. I mean, like, you know, having gaming featured on a movie somewhere and, you know, in some kind of positive light, though I think that'd be good. It's just a matter about having subtle stuff all over the place and being able to flood our culture with this positive impact that can help, you know, grow the industry. And of course, we're all, you know, happy for that, because I believe that it also betters our quality of life when we have this kind of entertainment that we can show our children.
No, I absolutely agree. Unfortunately, speaking from a place that I'm sitting at, a lot of that stuff costs a whole lot of money that we don't have.
Yeah.
There's only a few companies the size of Mayfair that can afford to even do what we're doing here at the cruise. You know, I've mentioned a few of them before. It comes down to financial resources and manpower. We're spending our time right now in a plethora of different projects to try and promote gaming in general, our company as a whole and gaming in general, because if the gaming industry does well, so will we. But we have a few more resources than your average game company that's got one or two games, and the guy in charge has still got a day job, as we call it.
You know, I wonder, though, if maybe we can look away from the game companies to start it for the reason you just gave. Kim, you don't work for a game company.
No.
Tell me about the first gamer adventure trip. How did that start?
Well, the first one started with my husband has a gaming group, and this one, demographically, only the men gamed. None of the women gamed. And so our husbands would take off every once in a while, and they'd call it Hotel Con, where they would like just pick a hotel somewhere, and they would stay there for 3 days, and we would never see them. Or they would go to a convention, that happened out on the West Coast. And I think one of the things that the conventions happen is they're not always in the middle of the big city, because nobody can handle that. So instead of going to San Francisco for a convention where there's actually things for us to do, we're having a convention in Burlingame. There is nothing to do in Burlingame. You're looking at warehouses and the airport. Okay, that's it. And so I seriously pitched a fit. You know, it's like, you know, why can't you find something that we all can do? And he's like, well, you think of something. So I thought of the cruise venue, and so we gathered all of them up. We did a little 3-day rum run down to Mexico, which was really a story in itself. But we only had like about, there was like, what, 8 gamers and 8 spouses, and we just had an absolute blast. And with that in mind, I was like, this is really cool. I think that most other people would also enjoy it. But I think there also has to be a kind of an out-of-the-box feeling of what you're doing. I mean, you guys have been to however many cons you've ever been to. Has anybody other than me ever set up a travel agency booth in any of these places?
Nope.
Don't recall that there has been anything like that.
So that's what, you know, that's the kind of thing that people have to do. It's like I was talking to one lady who does doll dresses, and she was doing crafts. I'm like, why are you going to a craft show? There's 400,000 people there that are doing the same thing you are. Why don't you go to Home and Garden and make little gardening clothes? You'd sell it.
Yeah.
You know?
I wonder if maybe the mass media nut gets cracked the same way. Okay, we can't convince Paramount to make a BattleTech movie, but people that have some small film capability could get on their computer, and the same way you'd make any kind of small art house flick, could make an RPG flick. You know, maybe not as special effects intensive as BattleTech, but you really focus on the stuff you can do right, like the script and the quality. You know, not promoting the negative stereotypes, and those are funny. Don't get me wrong. You know, Scared of Girls and such was a hysterical film, but you don't portray the negative stereotype. But you show really good stuff. And all of a sudden, people start paying attention. And now, all of a sudden, the big movie houses or the big TV houses see something that they think they might be able to pick up. And I know there are some people out there doing stuff like this of varying quality. But, you know, maybe somewhere along the way, we can get one that clicks well enough to really catch the attention of some people that have that kind of money and that kind of production power.
Well, because up to now, frankly, it's been in the other direction. Okay, everyone is flocking around a movie to license thoughts, themes, ideas, products, action figures, games, and whatnot after the movie comes out or before the movie comes out and is successful. It's always been the other way around. Oh, you want to license my movie? Great, give me all sorts of money, and then we'll let you do something with it. You know, the unfortunate part with that is that one never ends up really reinforcing the other. When the movie goes away, so does the saleability of the product that they just made.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Even with something as powerful as Lord of the Rings, all of the mass stuff that came out with Lord of the Rings is pretty much done right now because the movies are done. There'll be a slight resurgence of all that stuff when the Hobbit movie finally comes out. Then most of it, not all of it, most of it will go away. The books will still sell because they've always sold. Some of the more popular products that are done by independents will sell because they have sold. But the mass market game or this and that just ain't going to make it once the movie goes away because, unfortunately, in America, we are about right now.
Right.
Okay, this is our legacy. This is, we're about what's happening right now. It's not really a whole lot of planning, and the past is the past, and we'll let it sit there. But it's about the next big thing. You know, as soon as the industry stops thinking about the next big thing, is when the industry will take the next big step. Don't mean to be a downer about it or anything, but that's just my observation from coming from outside the gaming industry into this total immersion that I've been in for the last 10 years is just the observations that I make perhaps are a little bit different. You know, it's just how I feel.
So, Larry, while we've got you here, why don't you tell me a little about what's going on at Mayfair? What's the big stuff we can look forward to?
What is the next big thing?
Maybe Gamma or
the next big thing? Having said that, I really didn't mean to set it up like that. Well, obviously, we're doing a number of projects with Don and Pulp Gamer, which I'll let him push later whenever he wants to. We have just released our new version of Catan, Catan Germany, which is the first of the Catan Geography series. We're very excited about that one. Wasn't sure if we were going to do it or not. The co-publisher in Germany was actually surprised that we wanted to do a game in America based on German geography, but it's a natural setup. Klaus Teuber is from Germany, so let's do one about Germany with the idea that sometime next year we'll do a Catan USA. which will be our product first, which is very important to us. We're coming out with a new rail game. Of course, we do a whole bunch of those. We're coming out with Martian rails this year. That should be out in time for Origins and such. We've got a new version of a deluxe version of the Catan dice game coming out with a leather dice cup and larger dice with color images etched in instead of painted on. We're starting to experiment with clamshell packaging so people can see stuff as they look at it and so on.
Oh, no, don't.
Well,
from a product placement standpoint, I understand, but man, I tell you, I'm tired of going to Best Buy, coming home, and shredding my hands in three kitchen knives.
Okay, well, I'm not sure about the second product in the pipe, but I can guarantee you that the first product in the pipe will simply be snapped closed and have a staple on it.
Okay, excellent.
Okay?
Good.
Because we are.
Because when they like heat seal them
or
whatever.
Keep in mind that we are still collating, assembling, what have you, more than 60% of our games in the United States in the back of my warehouse. We send out very, very little to China.
Right.
And most of the other production is basically done in Germany as a turnkey operation with our various partners over there, which is one of the things that we're rather proud of.
Well,
so,
good, yeah.
So, I mean, we've got a schedule chock full of nuts, chock full of games. We are releasing, of course, Bob's going to get mad at me later, but that's okay. We're releasing a follow-up to Pillars of the Earth, since you mentioned that it was being played a lot here on the cruise. It's a board game based upon World Without End, which was the literary sequel to Pillars of the Earth. It's not an expansion. It's not an extension. It's a standalone game. We're happy to say that we're co-producing this with Cosmos at the same time instead of 6 months later, which is important to us. That will be debuting at Essen. And then we've got a number of other projects that we're working together. In fact, I'm going to Germany in 6 weeks. Rough life I have. I'm going to Germany in 6 weeks to sit down with Amigo to see what they have that's hot and that we might want to do either later this year or early next. But, I mean, we got a schedule chock full of stuff, which at the moment is escaping me because I'm starting to fry. Maybe too much sun or too much rum or both over the last few days. And we're just happy to be here. We're just, you know, we are getting larger, whether we like it or not. We're reaching out to a whole bunch of folks as best as we can. You know, you talked about doing things for gamers. Kim literally worked on me for 3 years to get me to come out on this thing. And I think that this one was the right one to do it at, you know, for whatever reason. You know, Kim's got her program going and growing. We're going to work with her one way or the other, whether we show up or don't show up, to continue working with her to push the program. Because you're right, you've got to reach out to non-gamers. Give the significant others something to do, whether
bring
they're
the
men, women, or little green men.
And, you know.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I brought my mother and my mother-in-law along with. You know,
right.
they didn't really play any games or something, but they're here. We're together as a family. Okay, I had to do this thing with the gaming. Not that this was a chore or anything. I got to play a game or two as well along the way. So, you know, that's just what we're trying to do. We're trying to reach beyond the gamer without forgetting the gamer. They're the ones that brought us here. You know, so we're not going to abandon them and all of a sudden start doing mass market pablum for the lowest common denominator.
Right.
We're not going to lower our standards. We're going to continue to publish the games that we're publishing, those types of games. There might be a simple game here and there, but that's appropriate. We have the resources, we have the folks that can do this kind of stuff, but a lot of wonderful game authors out there that are willing to work with us to get some cool new stuff out there. So, you know, that's the steps that we're taking to do that. You know, the rest of the schedule is sort of semi-secret, frankly, because I don't remember half of it. But, so we'll pretend it's highly confidential. Oh, wait a minute, I just said that. So that's where we're at.
All right, well, Derek, Don, Larry, Kim, I want to thank you guys for joining me. Well, my own co-host abandoned me.
Oh, but, what a bum.
I know.
You know, just a comment that I meant to mention earlier. You talked about interaction and stuff. I'm sure some of this is being picked up from the microphones as we sit here. Keep in mind that we're sitting inside the game room that the cruise ship provided for us, and in this entire time while we've been talking here, all that background noise is a dozen or so, or more than a dozen or so people in the background playing games. and wondering why the hell we're sitting here in the corner talking on microphones. So you talked about the interaction. You talked about people looking at each other. We were talking about the video earlier. The entire room is filled with gamers, and that's all the noise that you've been hearing in the background this whole time is people interacting, playing board games of some sort.
Yet if anyone wants to see a visual in all this, Don, I believe you're putting together a video montage. Is that a correct? Is that correct? I mean,
oh,
if
really?
So...
Oh, well, I've been collecting some footage on the on the trip here. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, when exactly, because I'm going to be actually working really hard. I'm doing some videos. You very gracefully snuck that in there that we've been doing some stuff with Mayfair Games, shooting some videos. So we put together some. They're going to be made available. They're largely for some of the retailers as well.
Just, you know, just as a retail opportunity, if you do shoot the cocktail party at 4:30 today, there will be quite a few people that will pay you not to show it.
Well, maybe I can make some money and not have to worry about it.
See?
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
If you want to put that all together into a montage and set it some menu or something, I would be happy to link it off our show notes.
Well,
so
I will
check that out.
I will
out,
try
so.
To do that.
All right.
It might not be immediately because I got a couple weeks now to prepare for GTS and get another video going for Mayfair, but you know, after that, then maybe we'll have some time to put some of those, because I want to get some pictures off there for myself,
right.
too.
All right. Well, thank you guys for joining me. I want to thank the rest of you for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Thanks, Dan.
All right. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.